Recording.
Yep. Okay, we're recording both on the cell phone and the computer. So we've got a microphone there. That's the computer sound. And we have also sound that's coming through the cell phone. So we've got two ways for there to be sound being recorded. So this thing is going to be successful. And everybody, welcome. This is the Reskilling, Reusing, and Life Hack event. That's happening on August 29th, 2017 at the Portland Public Library in their audio, in their all-purpose room, which is perfectly fine. We have guests, visitors, other people are going to be coming. That's perfectly fine. We have a presentation that is full of lots of cool pictures. And then we also have dialogue that's going to happen and presentation. Etc. So I guess anybody wants to present, and that will be everybody in the room, because everybody has skills and ways to do reskilling, can basically introduce themselves now. So say your name and your gender.
My name is Simon, and I'm a guy.
I'm a guy at Washington.
All right, and I'm Nate, and I was born a male. I think that's what you need to say these days, isn't it? You know, what were you, what gender were you at birth? So, just, first of all, ignore what I say, because this has no bearing on anything to do with reskilling or reusing, which is perfectly fine. So the idea of reskilling and reusing is kind of long and tortuous, and there is several other events that have been occurring monthly for the last couple of years or so. And they can be found on metagenny.com/reskill. All of those can be looked at through a PowerPoint as well as audio file. Now, Metagenny is spelled metagenny.com. And all the slides that will be presented today are already up on the website at that blog for the August entrance. And that's ready to go. So there's rationale for why we would need as a society to reskill, to reuse, and why we need to have added life hacks. And that's cool. So the themes that I hope to touch on today, and I have a set of nice pictures and lots of words, but the words make you, when I see words, it's less instructive than pictures. So we start out with pictures and go to words if we have time, because, you know, we have to always look at the clock, but the themes that we're going to touch on, which I promise you we will, it might be 5 seconds, is why would we ever want to do reskilling, reusing, and life hacking? And we're going to save that more for the end, because it does get kind of either fun or deep, depending on how you go. Another theme would be how to do some like engineering cute, quirky, geeky, designy science thing. Also, some ways to explore the artistic expression in those factors. Some invigorating actions that people can do. Food is huge. And transportation is also going to be involved. And also ways to protect yourself and to heat yourself will be discussed. Then we're going to be looking at the idea of how to be a happy person and well-being in terms of what skills you need there. Also some hygiene and some connecting with people and interpersonal relations, which will be, of course, obviously fun as we explore. So I think what I'll do is basically start off with real simple idea for about bifurcation of reskilling. Bifurcation means a split off, a fork in the road. We're going to really need to reskill as a society, because our artificial intelligence and internet is going to eat us alive, pretty much. So we have to start learning code and internet stuff almost immediately if we want to keep up with the way things are going. So that's from The Economist, which are people that kind of know where the bankers are going to put money, and San Francisco and China and all that stuff. So learning code. The other way The veer off in the other direction is the what I call the wolf crying arborists, which means you're just saying we need to grow arborists as a person who grows trees, but you know, growing your own food, live simply, we got to start doing that now. So if you don't have to learn code as much as you need to learn how to, I don't know, survive. And the third thing one can do is to do nothing. And then you'll learn that you're perishing and you don't know why your demise is insured. So I want to obviously get the word out there that let's pick either, you know, one or two, which is learning internet guru stuff, or we could just learn how to do stuff ourselves simply and self-sufficiently. And we have a presentation which we're going to be hearing about, and I want to introduce Simon about that pretty soon. But before I do that, I want to say that if you go to the slide that says Parkland, P-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Zach and I were at the Faulkner Gallery in Portland last night, and it was cool. There's a lot of cool arty stuff there, and it's nice to be arty, but it's also kind of fun to be thinking about how to reskill and reuse, and what in ways would can Faulkner be doing that. Hey, welcome. We have another guest.
Hey.
State your name and your gender at birth. All right, well, we got enough cues. We can get a profile based upon your vocal thing. So if anybody wants to know who you are, we already got you then. See?
We're recording.
Yeah.
So when three of the four of us were at the Tim Faulkner Gallery last night, I asked Tim Faulkner, hey, what do you do for reskilling, reusing? You want to give me a tour? He said, no. He's a busy guy. So I went around and I looked and I saw there's some cool art things that are involved reskilling. So if you look at the picture, which you cannot see it unless you can see the screen, on the left, he did say, hey, look over there. I got that at Nelligan Hall, which is also in Portland, on Portland Avenue and 22nd or so. There's these long tables. And I guess they're just either sold, given, or something, but they're being reused. Nelligan Hall doesn't get quite as much need for these long tables as, say, I don't know, Tim Faulkner Gallery. So there you go. That's kind of
planks that are painted.
Yeah, those are cables. Yeah, those are like 12 feet tall. You know, they're just massive. Of course, I took a picture and didn't do justice at all. I don't care. Now the other thing, upper right hand corner, I asked, where'd you get this cool fan? Because you can always go to Lowe's or something and get a fan and pay $3,000 for it. But he said, no, I just got it from a local place and they just had a fan and I just got it. So, I mean, I honestly have to say it's loud. I appreciate the fact that they had a sound system so we could like hear each other talk if we wanted to present. But I don't care that it's loud. It's nice to have kind of a buzzing background all the time anyway, just because, you know, I'm built that way. I like to have a little bit of noise buzzing around. The third thing I can say about the Tim Faulkner Gallery is that once you go into the door, front entrance, you can see immediately that there's a welded horse made out of metal, and it kind of has a lot of features to it that are really fascinating, and one would always want to go to Tim Faulkner Gallery, either walking or biking, or maybe on a car, I don't know. And yeah, it looks like it has a necklace, and I mean all kinds of different things. That's cool. But all I'm saying is that what's happening is that Tim Faulkner is reusing things, and he's got skills such as welding, and he finds things in the neighborhood. That rather than buying them from China or from Lowe's. Well, the interested student can find out and you can check back with us next month. I don't know, but it's just a phone call away. It's just a phone call away. Yeah, it's just, you know, I don't. It's a picture, it looks nice, it has the reskilling feel to it, and that's cool. Now, I know that Zach you do a lot of welding. And what do you feel like when you see like a picture and you hear the story of Tim Faulkner making something out of stuff, making something that looks like a unicorn thing?
I was in conversation about that horse last night. I wish it had like, personally, I mean, you know, the artsy side, like, whatever, you know, it was great. But I like practical art, so, like, I was thinking it should be able to move, maybe ride it, you know what I mean? Like, actually have a hydraulic leg to where it's, so, like, you know, repurposing it for function instead of just as a decoration. But yeah, I mean, like, the logo was good on it, my phone, you know, somebody put a lot of time and effort into it, finding parts.
So there's different kinds of welding. There's welding where it's so hot that it melts the actual metal material that you're welding, versus the arc welding where you use a pin or a rod or something.
Yeah, well, like, so I guess if I'm hearing you correctly, there's fuse welding, like with a plug welding, or and then there's arc welding, which would be your standard MIG TIG stick.
Yeah.
So all of them take a silly metal. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, you know what? I'm just getting people out there in terms of what is welding. Is it valuable? And
you can do cool stuff.
This would be an entrance into a valuable new skill.
Yeah. I think left after high school with Justin Tech. So, I mean, served me well.
And it's super electrical intense, right? It just draws a lot of power when you're welding.
Yeah.
So it really is a community thing. Like, you found a community welder that would be better than everybody owns their own welder.
Yeah, no, there's great shops where you can actually get space and use welders now. You were talking about one. I was talking about Maker 13 the other night. And like, you know, for having access to those kinds of equipment, you know, you don't want to buy it yourself. No, I mean, you know.
Well, we might come back to that, but it does just kind of draw people's attention to the idea that there's a skill right there, welding, because sometimes you can't just make things out of wood all the time. Yeah. Let's see. So instead of talking about the next slide, I want to introduce Simon, who is going to basically not talk about slides. He's going to talk about real things. And he, unlike myself, actually knows what he's going to be talking about. For instance, you know, he's involved in something called permaculture, and I gave him an opportunity to say, Simon, I want you to speak about permaculture, because I've heard permaculture talks before, and they're way over my head, and they're boring, and I wanted you to just win the day, because it's a mountain to climb, and I want you to introduce permaculture, and then take it to wherever you want to go with it, and I'll draw it back to reskilling and reusing, because I'm like that. So just, Simon, share from your heart.
All right, will do. So I first heard about permaculture, I don't know, you just heard it as a buzzword on the internet at some point or whatever. And then last fall, or I guess two falls ago now, I really need to learn more about this stuff because I care about the food system and growing your own stuff, being self-sustainable. And I also was interested in, you know, I got these newsletters from the Eco Village in Missouri, Dancing Rabbit, the name of it, and they finally were like, oh, you know, we're having this huge permaculture class coming up, and I was like, you know what, like, screw it, I'm going to just sign up and just drive myself 7 hours to go to the middle of nowhere for 10 days to study this stuff. So that's basically how it came to me. And what I like about it is that it's not a set of, like, rules, or, like, a hard set of rules that you have to follow. It's not like, oh, well, this is how we do it. You know, you have to follow these steps and this and that. It's like, it's not like a diet, you know, where you know, it's like, oh, if you really want to be healthy, here's the secret. You have, eat only this and only this and not this and not this. It's like, the bullshit flag doesn't need it. It's just like, it doesn't, you know. What I like about permaculture is it's a set of principles that you can use for anything that don't necessarily just have to do with agriculture, but also like social relationships, finance, pretty much any problem that you encounter. There is a set of solutions that, you know, it's a way of thinking about certain things that lend to really productive solutions. So part of it is, you know, if you go to the Wikipedia page, like it's a set of agricultural and social design principles that focus on relationships and sort of systems and understanding patterns. Basically, it's like design using patterns that are already in the natural world. And so there are three main, I guess, like ethics that you kind of have to buy into, which I think are kind of universal. Care for the earth, care for people, and then the other one is called fair share or equitable distribution of surplus, which is basically keep in balance like how much you're using versus how much you're returning to the system. And once you sort of buy into that, there's a set of principles that are sort of just ways of thinking about any kind of problem or solution or goal you can have. If you want, I can just go through those.
Would you? Yeah, would you go through the first one and then go to the second until we're all done?
Got it. I think I see what you're saying. So there's 12 principles. The first one, observe and interact. So in an agricultural context, a garden context, like, you know when you're, say, you know, I live not too far from here. I have a yard. It gets sun at certain times of the year in certain areas. Certain places are shady at certain parts. I can expect this amount of rainfall. I can expect these kinds of bugs. I can expect these kinds of, wind patterns, et cetera. And so just, you know, open your eyes and look around. Same thing with in a social context, like, you know, notice your neighbors walking by. See what they're doing. And maybe not be too nosy, but, observe. And then once you feel like you have some ideas, interact with it a little bit. And it's this feedback, you know, loop of seeing what is going on already, what already is there, how does it work, and then trying to get involved with it in a way that, you know, can benefit your use or the better use in whatever way. Another one is catch and store energy. So there is just a constant stream of energy shooting at the earth and sun. Plants catch that energy. Part of it is, you can get solar panels. That's a great way to do it. But also, like, it rains a lot. And when it rains, that water can either stay on your property and do something awesome for you. It can water your garden. It can, you can catch it and sink it into the ground so that the water table is filtering basically before it goes into the storm drain, feeding anything in the nearby area. If something is naturally growing in your area, there's grass on my so naturally I just have, it turns out it's fun, grass clippings at the end of, when I mow. That can be compost, that can be whatever. So just thinking about like what kind of things are already here and how can I catch those and store them. So, like for me, also I'm an extrovert, and so if I'm around other people, like that's when it's time for me to be like, getting my thoughts out. So for me, it's like the energy that I have is like available in a certain context, and realizing that like, I'm in a place where now I'm talking to three other people who are interested in having a conversation and talking about things. Perfect. There is an energy flow going, and I'm gonna catch it and make it up. Obtain a yield. Pretty straightforward. Make sure that you're getting something useful from whatever work you're putting into it. Obviously, if you're, if you're growing stuff, you collect your food, eat it, also realize all the parts of the plant that you can use, blah, blah, blah. Socially, for me, I've realized, like, I have a ton of neighbors that are, around me that have all of these skill sets that, if I need, like, my neighbor the other day was pouring rain, and he was moving furniture, he just moved to Michigan, and was like, and I went over and met him, nice few weeks earlier and was like, you need anything, let me know. And he just like sprints over my house in pouring rain, bangs on my door, and I'm like half asleep. So I'm like, what? He's like, hey, I have this couch, can you help me move it real quick? I'm like, okay. But that's an example of, obtaining a yield from a social relationship that, you know, there are people around that are willing to help, you know, like, use the most of your social relationships and any kind of things that you might have laying around. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for me, part of it, I orient towards gardens, but then I also, beyond that, am more interested in, like, social sustainability, and, like, these principles apply perfectly to that. Number four is apply self-regulation and accept feedback. For me, in a gardening context, it's like, I've tried gardening for, I have gardened with very level of success for the past 4 years, and every time I do it, it's like, I bite off so much more than I can chew, and I have all these huge ideas, and then, like, halfway through the season, I'm like, okay, I have made it impossible to mow, I've made it impossible to read all of these things, I have no clue, there's no way this is going to work out, and so every year, I'm, you know, accepting feedback, realizing, like, okay, there's, you know, and then trying to regulate myself. I'm like, okay, I don't need to grow 8 different kinds of tomatoes. I don't need to eat tomatoes. What am I doing? Same thing, social contact. You know, just, I think that's pretty straightforward. Apply self-regulation, accept feedback. Don't get too carried away. You know, don't ruin social relationships by being so greedy about, you know, what's gratifying for you out of this. And accept feedback, like listening. Listening is a huge part of social relationships and any other kind of relationship with anything you do. But if I have any questions, feel free to stop me from rambling, because I'll ramble.
No, I, like I said, I knew permaculture is involved, and I'm getting these things, and
yeah.
I'll have questions a little bit later, but not right now.
Okay. Yeah, there's also, I brought, like, my textbook and all that, so if anyone wants to look at anything. So number five, use and value renewable resources and services. If you're going to be sustainable, that means you can continue to do it indefinitely. And so, you know, growing your own food is a part of that, because you can, theoretically, if you go through the whole system of it, you can continue to grow, you know, take one plant, plus the seed, and grow your own garden using that reliably for a pretty long time. But also, not getting things that are disposable if you can avoid it. I think we all know just what renewable resources are at this point, which is a good thing, but services is another interesting thing. Renewable, it says, you know, use and value renewable resources and services. And this is part of what I think about with the social relationships thing, is like, if I have an issue with, like, if there's a bit of work that I need done in my house, I need something to happen, I can call someone, pay for them to come and do it, and then after they leave, that service is done. It's not. But if I form a relationship, and if I try to create this pattern whereby I'm giving to my neighbors, they're giving to me, and I have this group of people that I can talk to about, you know, what's going on at my house, and maybe they know something, you know. Social relationships are a renewable source of resources, knowledge, and a lot of times just manual labor. Like, I don't know if I would be able to do many things without having a huge family that, you know, has someone in it that knows how to do something. So in, you know, social relationships, if as long as you're a part of it, is a renewable resource and service. Number six, produce no waste. You know, everything can be used. There are entire houses built out of just repurposed things. If you use it once, there's probably a use for it again. I mean, like, the amount of use you can get out of one 5-gallon, like, plastic bucket is insane. Wood, for example, like, we just moved the Shipping Port Memorial Garden to a different place, and, like, a lot of the things that were there were just built out of driftwood that was found. And then we went and built another garden, but we just come and get all the old wood from that place that we're not using anymore, take it to the new place. Pretty straightforward. In a social context, I guess, produce no waste. I don't know. Does anybody have any thoughts about that? It could be any number of things.
Well, I mean, to value all life, I guess. You know,
yeah.
Rather than thinking that you're better than someone else, everyone has value.
For sure. And not, and again, keeping like, continuing to feed relationships that could otherwise just like wither and go away. Like, there's a lot of people that I'm sure of. I was like, oh, you know, I had all these connections, these people that I was friends with, had relationships with, and I neglected them, and then, you know, that is a waste of an awesome reciprocal relationship that I could still have.
Neglecting or...
Yeah. Like, since now, I'm living here, I have had friends who, oh, really, I pretty much don't keep up with them, so now I don't feel like to go home.
I know.
And what a waste, right?
Neglect or burning bridges. You can just, you know, be thoughtless and then make enemies or friends real quick.
Yeah. So number 7 is design from patterns to details. So this is an interesting one. This whole discussion is an example, and now we're discussing all of the patterns and all of the sort of the principles and things like that without talking about exactly what plant you should plant where in the yard. But there's sort of a, you know, first you start with the ethics, which is, you know, we talked about care for people, surplus. Then there's the principles that we're going over, and then there's like, okay, how are we going to try to create a method of seeing what we need to do? Then designing some strategies, and then what kind of techniques we have to implement those strategies, and then you have the solutions. So looking at the big picture is what it basically boils down to. Not trying to start with, oh, I really want, you know, to see a pea plant over there. More just like, okay, well, hold up. What is your diet like? How much time do you have? You know, start with the big picture, and then it's easy to fill in the details in a way that doesn't sort of eat away at your goals and your energy stuff. But, and then I think also for me, this is something that's come up, like I said, moving to a new place and not having any, you know, I think people take for granted if they grow up and stay in the same place all the time, but they have tons of relationships that were just by default there because they grew up there. But from designing some patterns to details, like if I move somewhere new, it's like, okay, well, not just, oh, here's someone, I'm going to meet this person. More like, what kind of people do I need to meet? What kind of relationships do I want to set up with people? And think about, okay, well, in a bigger picture, how do I want my life to lead? And okay, what kind of, how do I want that to look? For, you know, who I'm cooking my meals with, or who I'm, you know, playing tennis with, or what, you know, whatever number of things it could be. Number 8 is super important, integrate rather than segregate. And this has to do with, you know, everything is a system of relationships and set of patterns, and that's kind of core to permaculture, but to think about, you know, your garden as something that is separate from, you know, your house when it rains, or what you're eating on a daily basis, or what kind of wildlife is in your garden. So for me, it's like I mix all different kinds of things in my garden. It's part of the social space. It's a place to grow food. It's a place to grow things that are just pretty. It's integrated in my life in a way that's not kind of just this extra thing off in the corner. It's scattered around my yard all over the place. I have plants growing inside. I have plants growing off the fence and other places. And I think in a social context, I mean, integrate rather than segregate. Like, everything is made better by having more relationships. The more integrated you are with everyone in the community, the better. Like, I really, if I could have the option, I would totally take down the fence between me and my neighbor's yard. Because, like, why, you know, why does it necessarily, having his sort of, like, effect on that part of my yard, and having me having my effect on that part of the yard, would just be made much better if we didn't have to, like, pretend that, you know, we didn't both live 20 feet in this space, you know.
Unless they have dogs.
Yeah, unless they have dogs. Absolutely. Yeah.
No, they live with dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Something about...
Good point.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But you know, I understand what you mean. Well, pinned by a segregationist, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, another thing that I like about this is that this, because it's a set of principles, it applies differently to everyone everywhere.
Yep.
Catching and store energy, for some people that means designing a giant, like, swale on the contour of the farmland to, like, grow then an orchard underneath it. So like, so you're catching water there. Mm-hmm. For some people, like me, it's like, oh, well, I'm going to put a little ditch at my downspout so that I'm holding water there. If you live in an urban environment versus suburban versus a rural environment, completely different. If you live alone versus a lot of other people, it's different. And I like that it's part of what I like about this. People, I hear so many people, because I work in urban agriculture, it's just like, oh, well, I live in an apartment. This is what, I have no relationship with this. And it's like, you do. There is some space somewhere. Like, the sun is hitting that property. You have windows. You have, there are things that can go inside. There are lots and lots of ways to have a role in your food system directly without having to have, like, basically a farm in your yard. So, yeah, it can apply to pretty much anything.
What about number nine?
Number nine, use small and slow solutions. It's very, there's sort of an idealism about growing your own food and being self-sustainable, where you have to say, like, oh yeah, I'm going to grow my own, all of this, I'm going to have my own meat that I grow, and I'm going to shave my sheep and make my own clothes, and I'm going to have all, you know, I'm going to produce all my own energy and do all of these own things. And it's like, that is doomed to fail, because, again, talking about like observing and interacting and applying self-regulation and accepting feedback, you can't really know how much is the appropriate amount unless you really just start and go a little bit by a little bit. And I keep thinking about my body, so I try to think about this. Like, first year I did it, I had a few raised beds, great, worked well. The next year I had raised beds and a little bit bigger, cool. Worked out better, and this isn't like me trying to, halfway through the year, I'm looking to be like, okay, look, I can probably do more and then do more. Like, take it easy, start by growing a couple things in a bucket, you know, if you can, or have a couple little herb plants on your thing so you get into the habit of watering and at least seeing what it's like to have plants, you know. There's no use in trying to make everything happen all at once, because that's not sustainable. A lot of the relationships that a natural ecosystem has that makes it work, those have been established over thousands, tens of thousands, millions of years. If you're going to say, like, oh, you know what, let's put a river here and then try to cut a river and put some trees there, it is going to look nothing like the natural river right over there. So start small and add a little bit here and there and constantly observe and apply feedback. And then social relationships, same thing. Like, there's so many relationships get ruined by people trying to do too much at once. Either like, oh, I just met you, cool, we got along the first time, do you want to be my roommate? You know, it's like, take it easy. You don't have to, like, you know, be the star of the show immediately. Just like, let things happen organically. As far as we know on Earth, what works. Number 10 is using value diversity. A lot of people, this sort of plays into the integrate rather than segregate, but all these principles can also be applied financially. So I think about that one in terms of finances. Like, if you have one job and you get fired from that job, you have been in it. And this isn't necessarily the goal of having, you know, oh, everyone should have another job, but it's more like there's a whole different set of ways of providing what you need for yourself. And the more diverse it is, the more resilient it is. If you can imagine, like, an ecosystem where there's just one kind of insect, one kind of bird, one kind of other predator, one kind of plant, if one of those dies, the entire thing is gone. Very easy. But, like, we could probably lose an entire species of insect or something like that. But there's so many other kinds of insects that the whole relationship to, you know, the categories of animals to the others isn't going to be diminished. And that's not saying we should, distinguish the insects.
You want to have a broad portfolio.
Exactly. Have a broad portfolio. probably. And then, of course, social relationships, same thing. Like, there are some, I realized this recently because I just got out of a long relationship. I was like, oh, I put all of my, like, social needs in one basket, and then that is gone, and now it's like, okay, would have been much better is for me to maintain a lot more kind of relationship that let me sort of not be so, like, you know, I guess just out of it when that one thing is on. Like, oh, the person that I text every day and chat about random nonsense stuff and get lunch with, that could be so many different people. And of course, everyone has different ways of thinking about the world, ways of seeing things, different experiences, different skill sets, different conversation styles. All of those are valuable inputs to evolution. So, use and value diversity. And number 11 is use edges and value the margin. This plays into the diversity and also integrating rather than segregating, but in it turns out, in terms of like production of plant life and diversity and allowing for a lot of different things to grow in one space, the most important zone physically is like an edge zone, so where a forest meets a plain, or where a bank, where a river ecosystem meets the land, or something like that. And it's because there's all of these interesting interactions that happen on these lines that allow for a lot of different purposes for plants to be filled. And if you think, if you're, you know, a small shrub or something like that trying to grow in a forest, there's a canopy, you can't really do much. You know. But if you're on the edge, there's so many different layers and types of plants, of plants that can spread in lots of different ways. There's lots of things from the forest that can come and interact with it, and lots of relationships also from the plant. So in my particular yard, what this means is I don't plant in my garden, I don't have it in one kind of square, in rows, I kind of let it, you know, zigzag around to make a lot of edge, so that each one of those little edges is its own little microclimate that kind of it seems more stable and can have its own little niche. Use the edges of your yard. Like if you have a fence way in the back of your yard, that's where I put my blackberries. Why not? The edges of your garage or something like that. Plant all kinds of things there. Basically, just value every little bit of everything. And the social relationship is huge because, like, the marginal, the term marginalized people is not a new term. Everyone knows that either someone who thinks differently or feels differently or acts differently, and really valuing that person for all of their skills and gifts and things that they can offer is huge. Especially if you're living, say, in a community where everyone in that community is everyone else's sort of lifeline. So like a family, for example, where it's like your fate is pretty tied to the fate of your family in a lot of ways, and really valuing every person for everything that they are because they see the world in a way that no one else does, and that's incredibly valuable at coming up with solutions that you won't be able to see. So that's use edges and value watching. Number 12 is creatively use and respond to change. This goes back to applying self-regulation, accepting feedback, observe and interact. But, everything is dynamic. There is no relationship that's just, like, static forever. Patterns don't just kind of stay stationary. They change all the time. And so being aware of any changes that happen. So, for example, if it seems like over the past several years, the first frost date has shifted a little bit in one direction or another, or maybe some aspect of the environment, like the tree canopy in your yard, has changed a little bit. Respond to that. Realize what that means. Change it. If the makeup of your neighborhood has changed in the past 10 years, what does that mean? How can you creatively respond to it to make the relationship that you have with it as productive for everyone as possible, and as happy and healthy for everyone as possible?
I've been thinking a lot about families who have a willow that's at the end of its life.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going to have to come down. And it's actually coming down naturally. And kind of enjoying watching that space.
Yeah.
But at some point, it's going to have to just totally come down. And it's going to be a huge void there. And the whole environment around it is going to change. Takes up a lot of space. It shades a lot of things. It makes a big mess. So it's kind of interesting. Although I'm cutting off the shoots and starting to root from the shoots.
Nice.
advantage of that, and I want to enjoy it as it's coming through the stage.
For sure.
I
found.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It sounds like observing that and responding to it and creatively using it is exactly what you're doing.
Well, it sounds like the 12 dynamics of permaculture has a lot of legs to it, and there's a lot of thoughtfulness. That's probably one chapter of the thought process of it. So where does this go? Because I have lots of questions about the 12, but the 12 is only like the front entrance to a huge castle. I mean, if you think so, you say it.
Yeah, it's kind of this big beast of you know, and that's kind of the sort of table of contents, I guess. It's like, here's the three ethics: care for people, care for the earth, and using the surplus to keep everything in balance, and equitable redistribution and fair share. And then the principles are just things to keep in mind. And you know, if you have those, then it's like, okay, well, what's the problem? What's your goal, I guess? And then you can apply those to pretty much anything. So if part of it could be, okay, I want to really make my yard able to grow a lot of food for myself. Apply that to that solution. Or like, oh, you know what, I'm moving to your town. I really want to make it a happy place for me to be. These principles will work. Or, I feel like professionally, I've thought about this a lot, just like with my job, like, okay, what is my relationship to like the financial aspect of my life, my work relationships and things like that. So it's kind of, you know, like I said, start with patterns and move to specific design. And so this is sort of the pattern of way of thinking about it. And then what you want to design depends on, like I said, any specific you need. But it can go anything from like, you know, how to make a certain blend of soil to do this or this kind of tree on this landscape in this environment to, yeah, like I said, how to turn a walnut tree into several different streams of income. There's, you know, any different kind of thing. So. I don't know if that answers your question.
Well, yeah. Well, if you answer one question, it just generates three more. But the most, not that you're not doing an excellent job, it's just that I have this brain that just spins off these things. So what the most curious one, which is the most obtuse I can think of, is socially, financially, and your garden eco. But has there ever been an element of, oh, let's just start a religion and get the spirit involved and all that kind of stuff? And because this harbors itself for kind of groupthink in a really big way. And if someone mentions God, then you just got yourself a church. That you never heard of that before, like the permaculture church or anything like that.
And because there are a lot of that sort of, there are a lot of ways of thinking about agriculture and social relationships and financial things that do sort of revolve in some way around this sort of like buying into some kind of thing, be it a philosophy that, you know, whatever. But what's great about permaculture is that most people that practice permaculture don't even know that it's called permaculture. They don't, you know, like my instructor one time ran into this guy who was, you know, just found a big empty lot and somehow got a bunch of compost on there and then started just growing a bunch of potatoes, like not even in boxes, but just like in piles of dirt. And he was like, yeah, man, you know, one day I want to be able to do permaculture, but now this is all I got. And I was like, what are you talking about? You're doing it. It's like, you're doing exactly that. You're using, you know, you're observing what's around you, interacting with it, catching and storing energy, obtaining a yield, applying for, you know, you're doing all the things. So everyone in some way is doing part of this set of principles already. So it doesn't necessarily, you don't have to buy into it per se. If, you know, if you think one of the principles is wrong or messed up, then yeah, leave it out. The rest of it's still there. Yeah. And it's, like I said, it can apply to sort of anyone, anywhere, in any context. And maybe not the chapter on soil, maybe that's not relevant if you live, you know, on a high rise in New York City, but like I said, there is some social aspect of the principle that can work, or maybe not. Maybe one day it eventually will come around. But yeah, what I like is that, as he always says, you know, I have this, because he's the guy who taught me all this. He was a truck driver for 10 years. And then was like, you know what, like, this isn't working. I feel like I should be doing something else. And then went to a few different kind of seminars and things. And he was like, you know, I have a pretty solid, like, bullshit meter. If something gets to the point where, like, okay, now I'm having to buy into it, and it's like, you know, I'm kind of having to give it the benefit of the doubt. He's like, that just never happens. He's like, there's two things that permaculture observes, and that is, what is there in the world? How are things, and then how does it work? So what's there, and then what patterns and relationships are around that? You know, so it's either you sit in your, you know, on your front porch, like, okay, what is here, and how does it work? Like, okay, here's all the things I see, here's how they change over time, how they interact with each other, and that's pretty much it. Taking that into account, then, and using that to say, okay, well, if there's plants over there and they are interacting with these different elements and are growing in this part of my yard, well, why don't I just replace those with something that I want, that I can get the yield from? Like the people who do this best, you know, they can walk away from their property and come back in 5 years and it's better than when they left. It you know what I mean? It takes care of itself. That's part of the start slow and small solutions and stuff like that and applying self-regulation. I will take on a huge job that I can't do. So for me, it's like keeping an eye on like the labor. You know, it should be easy. It should be very, very easy. Part of it should be designing so that you don't have to put any work into it. Perennials, for example, like growing a tree and putting things around the tree that will feed that tree and that will use that tree effectively. Way better than doing
I think that's called like pairing. You know, you put one plant with another. They kind of see, what is it called?
Companion
planting. Yep. And
and
it kind of goes on forever because humans have been doing like growing plants for approximately 10,000 years. So there's probably a lot more companions that we haven't yet invented or discovered, but there's a whole lot that we do know about, Google knows about, but I don't, you know, but we can find them. Like, for instance, I was given some comfrey.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, oh, comfrey is cool, here's why it's cool, and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then I see comfrey over at Louisville Grows, and they've got it right at the base of a fruit tree. It's
okay.
Like, oh, makes total sense, and it's kind of neat to see. I can't, Simon can.
Well, there's a lot of ways that they help each other. For one, comfrey is like an accumulator of a lot of nutrients in the soil. So comfrey will bring up a lot of nitrogen and things like that for the tree. In the same way that for thousands and thousands of years, Native Americans have planted corn, bean, and squash together, they give each other things. Beans pull up nitrogen and can use the corn to climb on, and corn has some shade, and squash can pull leaves down, that sort of thing.
If you don't mind, the one thing that sticks in my head is a picture of a permaculture presentation that had the house, and the first ring was kitchen, it was like herbs really close, because when you're like, oh man, I need some oregano, go get some oregano, bang, you got, the second tier is your, a little farther away, you got to walk 10 seconds to get to your vegetables. And that's where your vegetables are. And then you've got to walk 30 seconds to get to your trees, because you harvest your trees, you know, once in a long time, whereas you get your herbs, like, almost daily. And if you just have the trees up close and the herbs out back, well, okay, but when you're designing it, the place to do it is
right.
And if you don't know that stuff, then you just can't. You can only either think of it, or you just figure it out, or you just move on.
Yeah, you set yourself up for failure in a way. Like, people who are like, oh, yeah, I have this place way back there, and that's where I want to have my garden. Like, well, you're probably not going to
do
that. Unless you happen to park down there and walk by it. It's like, I pick way more food from the garden that's right next to my driveway than I do this stuff. And the blackberries, I don't even know what blackberries are. I check on my blackberries.
Ouch.
Yeah. 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 That's a common thing.
So I just have a broad question that I know Zach's been thinking about. Like, you know, I got a question about the integration one, about the backyard, because I think that it might be you who has a backyard that you share with your parents. And so there's a perfect opportunity to integrate or disintegrate, depending upon, you know, your relationship with your parents, right?
No, integrate. Yeah, the backyard. Yeah. My backyard is not very defense. It needs to be a little less than two. Like, a little more work on that. But with the other, yeah. But my mom was great with like, I'm thinking any help she got. You know, plant the trees and the shade there. Harvest some water. That's barn house or greenhouse. I forget what it's called. I'm pulling that in, but they're saying that you can actually get a healthy house. Yeah, you get a tax base. If you have your water spout coming into the ground, you know, through dollars, so like it's not water waste, and you can actually get money back from the city for that. You know, simple ways to integrate. Like,
and then
it's not
going
to be hard.
The question in my mind, a broader question is, if someone comes to Portland, they got a house, and it's all new. Who knows what they're going to do with it? You know, how many people do lousy things because they don't know, or they do the right, they know what the right thing is, but they don't because they don't want to put the time in. So the opportunity is right there. You know, you're a case in point, which is new. What's going to happen?
Then I'm going to take that house, and whatever house it happens to be, I'm going to make the best of what it is, and I'm going to use what is there, and I'm going to make the best of that, and that's what I'm going to have my time. It's still a long way to go, but I still feel like it's organically developed, rather than me changing what they are to make it. And I don't know, it just seems like it's, I don't know, it's like the opposite way of the way people will shop.
That. Well, and here's a broader question I have too is, how lost do you think our culture is with respect to these 12 principles, and are we lost in some areas more than others? Because the case in point of, you know, Cindy said most people, they just buy the house and they don't think about how to design it in. And so, you know, is permaculture, like, needed so bad it's just, like, stupid?
Yep. I would say, in a sense, it's kind of hard to say because, in one sense, like, we all are a living dynamic system. And so, in starting with slow and small changes and observing and interacting, responding creatively to change, it can't just be like, okay, stop what you're doing now and start doing this instead. That's not sustainable and never will be. But starting with small, slow solutions and saying, like, okay, well, you know, if I can eat a little bit, you know, if I can grow at least something that I'm cooking in the day-to-day, if I can make sure that I'm participating in some relationship with people in my neighborhood, if I'm it's tiny, tiny, tiny little bit, if I can start using a little bit more of this renewable thing and reusing this resource and using my neighbors as a resource for X, Y, and Z, or, you know, it has to start small, and it has to be decentralized, and that's a big part of it for me is a lot of people look to policy shifts, either government or, like, big-scale economic shifts, but those won't be part of the solution almost by principle, Like, it, you know, it has to be completely decentralized. The way that we in this neighborhood respond creatively to local changes, and the way that we use the resources that we have to set up our own sets of relationships is dramatically different from the way that's going to happen in Kansas and in Seattle and in New York City and in, you know, South America and in the middle of nowhere, Australia. You know, every, it has to be decentralized. It has to be inclusive. Like, the solutions aren't going to be handed down. They're going to start from the bottom up, and that's kind of exciting and almost reassuring in a way, because it seems like, oh, well, if everyone makes a little bit of a change, that is, you know, if 7 billion people are doing it, that's insane.
Well, I've really remarked to myself, I got to write this down, on item number 5, which is to make small, slow solutions, and then it builds from there, and I was just remembering the opposite end of it, which is the Native Americans, before we decided to remove them from the area, they basically used fire to take down forests and create grassland so they could have buffalo like nobody's tomorrow, and they grew their crops like no tomorrow, and so they removed by fire all of the forest of, I don't know, like 10,000 square miles and whatever it is from Montana all the way down to Texas. That whole thing was just fired out. It used to all be trees and forest, and then they didn't want to be grassland. It's just that Native Americans made it grassland because they could get more food that way and they could travel easier rather than forest. So they started small by learning fire, you know, Homo sapiens 500,000 years ago. And then we've come to the point where we're basically controlling an entire continent until, you know, other folks came along and said, oh, why don't we think about permaculture, which they've been doing ever since the beginning of time, and growing slowly, but yet growing so largely that now they were, the whole continent was like that. Which I do have my references, so I stand by what I said. It's kind of neat because it's outlandish from like a brain perspective. Like, really? That was all cultivated? I thought it was just grassland. So that's neat. So we're going to probably have you back again, just because I know that there's more to be said, and there's a lot that you already provided there for thinking. And I probably will, in the blog somewhere, go ahead and put a link to the 12-step program.
Yeah, and what's cool about the whole thing is it's the guy who sort of coined the term, and his professor, which is Bill Mollison and David Holmberg, back in 1978, tried as much as possible to make it something that is, like, not a, and he even said in his first lecture, like, it's way too late to try to, like, incorporate this, make it something that, like, you have to sign up for and sell in a certain way. He's like, it's too late for that. Like, it's some solutions, like, take this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the information is pretty much widely available for free everywhere.
Yep.
That you could want to find. There isn't, you don't have to subscribe to a thing to get it. You know, the information is out there pretty widely distributed. So.
Well, and I would say probably maybe 10 years ago, there was a strong impetus by permaculture, at least from my perspective, that they wanted you to join up and pay $800, and then they would want to make a living off of being a teacher of permaculture because it's the right thing to do, and they believed in the American way, which is you work hard and you get paid for it. And what happens is that Americans are like, I'm not going to pay for that.
Yeah.
You know, and then all of a sudden, well, I'm not going to teach it if you're not going to give me money. And in the midst of all that, the internet happens, and then you just have the explosion of information. You can't keep it out.
I guess everyone kind of recognizes that to some degree, and they say, oh, I've been doing that since I was, like, I'm thinking, I've been doing that my whole life. So why would you pay someone $800 if you're going to go,
because a toddler's 3-year-old language is different than a senior in high school. I mean, there are lots of things that you can do. You can make a lot of money growing vegetables in a permaculture way, and there's your whole livelihood, versus just kind of ad hoc here and there. So there is benefit to doing that. And she goes on forever.
There's an infinite amount of. I mean, I was there for, this is 9 days. We camped on the place, and it was like, started 8:30 a.m., had breakfast, and it was instruction until about 8 o'clock p.m. 9 days in a row. I mean, it was like, and that's anything from, and it was never boring. Anything from, like where to plant your nut trees and what to plant next to it, to how to build a home and take into account what materials are going to absorb heat and hold that for the winter, and where you want the certain things to be facing, and really just a limitless amount of things. And what's cool is that they are updated every year. But when you're talking about soils, and you're like, oh, well, that's all we have for soils this year. We'll see what happens, you know, whatever. And the people who come up with solutions that then make it into this educational process are people that are like, oh, you know what, I'm like, here, I know of a big place where there's this resource and we can do this there. You know, there's this guy that wanted to keep bees and turn this rooftop place in Chicago into a place where he grows bees, and then also has, like, people who are not likely to get employed into, like, ex-felons and things like that, trains them on how to start their own business with beekeeping. And now there's this huge network of people like that. You know, you can use it as an example, but it's not, that's not the one goal of everyone. Not everyone can do that in every place, but it's just, you know. He's like, I am actively in some way, and I'm sure you are, and everyone else here is in some way actively increasing the whatever pedagogy is, making something new that, you know, isn't otherwise going to happen. But it really is kind of a huge umbrella thing.
Well, what I do is I want to entertain the rest of us and all the listeners with a few of the slides, but I also, Simon, I want you to be on point and maybe interject or summarize at the end of any possible synergy there would be to from permaculture to what the kind of these presentation ideas I have. And so what I've done from a few months back then is really getting into the idea that, oh my gosh, I have two cell phones in my pocket. I'll take one out and take a picture of an idea that I have that I just thought I would be reskilling and reusing. And so here I am. We're just going to go now to these slides that, unless anybody wants to summarize or any things that they've just got on the tip of their tongue that they want to say about based on Simon. I'm going to get to group hug him, but he's a little too far away, so we can't do that right now.
I have long arms.
Just stop it, okay?
Very good.
So, okay, so the beautiful thing is, this is how this goes, is the slide that I'm going to do, okay. The slide next is it's called Kitschy, which is things to do kind of in the kitchen, which is, for instance, I've mentioned before, sodium chloride is not as good for you as potassium chloride as a salt. So how do you get potassium chloride if you don't want to buy it from the store? You can get it in these 40-pound containers from Lowe's or whatnot. That's water softener. And then you just pound it with a mortar and pestle. So the left slide is where you just go ahead and pound away and turn big rocks of potassium chloride into salt for your kitchen table. And so that's one thing to do. You don't have to do it in your kitchen. You can do it out on the porch if you want to, and just have a, make a good time of it, because it saves money and it helps. Another thing I wanted to share is the upper right-hand corner, which is if you don't want to put Drano down the drain, it is not really all that helpful for the environment. So, and if you don't want to use a little thing, plunger or something to get up the drain, you can buy these daisy chain things. They're just links of chain that go into your hue trap, and you can wiggle it up and down. I don't know where do you buy it?
I think I got that at Menards.
Yeah, Menards. You can just get it, and
but
it's...
You can get them at a hardware store. They don't have to have the attached.
Yeah. Well, the idea, though, is you just mechanically use a chain that's at the catchment.
Well, it could be metal.
Yes. Right, because you don't need to use Drano. You just don't. You know, it's an anti-chemical. Period.
Or baking.
If you wanted to, yeah, but...
This works great. It kept me here.
Yeah, so that's a life hack. It's not a re, it's kind of a reskill a little bit.
It's just a regular chain. It just
like a pull chain for a, like a lamp?
A pull chain.
Oh, like,
yeah.
So not a
it's
chain
link.
Oh, a chain link. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Huh. Yeah, sounds good.
That's pretty, I have that problem.
Okay, and another thing that is in the kitchen, is the lower right hand, is, for instance, my son was in town for the summer. He decided that he wanted to get some veggie burgers, so he put some oil on high with about a quarter inch of oil. And then he put a frozen veggie burger on it, and he wasn't wearing a shirt, and he just basically, like, he's got spots of red now everywhere, and didn't know that you should do it on medium heat. Don't know that you should use very little oil, if not just not no oil at all, or just a little bit of pan of water, or just microwave at first. So there's this picture of a range with a whole lot of oil that he left. It's like, I gotta go. That's my sister. There's lots of oil there. That's just hilarious. Where there's a lot of easy things that people just don't know. You just gotta do it. You gotta burn yourself. You just gotta go at it every day and night to learn. So that's cool. So the next thing I wanted to talk about is this idea of upper right-hand corner of the slide called Elmer Fudd Food, whatever Elmer Fudd, which is food. So what the idea here is, on the leftmost, there's a potluck. And you just have a potluck. You get people who like to make food, and there you eat it together. This happens to be Earth Day, which is a vegetarian group that meets once a month, second Saturday of the year. Of a month, you can learn about that on Facebook or internet if you want.
What is that called?
Earth Save. It's a vegetarian group. We've got a long story, so that's an option for people.
You don't
no.
have to be a vegetarian,
it serves vegetarian food.
Yeah.
And the lower right-hand corner is what the cooking class for that last Earth Save meeting was, which is a vegan backpacking food, so it's kind of fun where we just kind of imagine what would be useful to eat healthy when you're wanting to buy, get a lot of dehydrated things when you're packing it in amounts. Fascinating. That's a reskill. And the upper right-hand corner has to do with the fact that if you've got a nice, big, fat zucchini, it's got a lot of seeds in it. Oops, lots of people just don't eat the seeds. But if you slice it with a sharp knife really thin and put it on toast with a little avocado and that salt that was in the previous slide, that tastes pretty good. And there's so much vegetable there you can't even see the toast that's underneath it. So that's about Elmer food. The next slide has to do with, I'm agreeing with you. And it has, if you notice that this is all about gardening and all that stuff. So the upper left-hand corner, upper left-hand corner is a person who is taking apart the parts of the raised bed for the shipping port, Portland garden that Simon mentioned earlier, and then Simon was involved in that day. That we moved it and continued to be active on that. So that was fun. Where we lost one community garden, but we're gaining another. The lower left-hand corner is a harvested wheelbarrow full of all the various plants that are perennials that I'm moving from the community garden that's way far away into the one here at Portland. I believe I will. At least it's in my backyard right now, which is blackberry, comfrey,
horseradish,
and lemon balm, and asparagus. And so those things were growing well, but I had too many weeds in my bed. They said, you got to fix your garden or else you're going to lose it, and I lost it. But I got all my starch. So I'm, yeah. I could just weed again, but it's like, oh, it's so far away. Pending. So another slide I want to talk about is the right-hand side. Right lower is a passion fruit. You can see the passion fruit at the very top of that.
Oh, yeah.
And the upper right-hand corner of that slide is the passion fruit in the whole corner of the garden, of the yard. And it grows really well, and it's awesome. and didn't even plant it. It just happened to be there, and I'm just nurturing it. I didn't cut it down like the rest of the weeds. So it's growing well, and I look forward to harvesting and eating the passion fruit, which some people call the throwaway weed, but it's actually quite tasty. Another, I would say, a hack that I would talk about is the center bottom picture is of a apple tree that is in the backyard of the Boys Girls Club on 26th and Portland. In the back parking lot, there is a tree, and if you look in the weeds, you can find a long white pole, plastic PVC pipe, and then what you do is you pop one of those trees, because they're like 15 feet up, and you pop one and it comes down and you grab it. So that they have that ready for you. Anytime you want, you just have that pole, you can just poke and get an apple.
And that reminds me of the time I found the apple trees along, I guess it's maybe 9th Street near the sheriff's office, and I couldn't reach the fruit, so I went home and I got my truck and I put a ladder on it, and I went back and then I picked a whole bunch of fruit. I was so happy.
Nice. Sweet. Sweet. Other, I'm agreeing with you, slide pictures to talk about would be the upper one. There's a praying mantis, which is in my backyard, and why praying mantis were back there, because I didn't really have any vegetables growing. But then I noticed that there was a tomato on the ground too, and I looked through the slats, and sure enough, I saw a vegetable garden being grown right on the other side of the fence, and that's where that animal, the praying mantis came from, probably eating the bugs in the vegetable garden next door. So that's a big monster. It's cool.
Yeah.
And then in the middle upper picture is a picture of a goldfish. So if you have a container of water catchments and you just put fish in there and they'll survive the winter, it survives, it's a 55-gallon drum, and so you can always have a source of making sure the mosquitoes are not thriving. So you can have fish there for that purpose.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah. Think about using fish to eat the mosquito larvae.
So that's, I'm agreeing with you. Yeah, they. I think fish cost about 15 cents a piece. Yep. Mm-hmm. The next slide has to do with other aspects of food, but more earthy nature to it. The upper left-hand corner is mushrooms. So I recently went to a trip out into the hinterlands of Kentucky and grabbed some mushrooms. So the lower left-hand corner is mushrooms in a bag, and basically with wood chips, I'm gonna harvest, put them, the mushrooms, into a container, and then have them grow out into the chips, and then put the chips into the logs and inoculate the logs. So that's the plan there. All of that's free. I don't know if it's gonna work, but I'm sure it's there. One thing that happened too is that when I had the wood chips, I had it in the container and it rained, and then there was all kinds of water in the wood chips. And then I looked at the water and it was completely brown. It was like wood chip tea. And I just wondered if that was like something that I could eat or not. Because bourbon is the same thing. The alcohol leaches out the wood as well. So, I mean, I don't know why you can have it with alcohol, but you can't just use water to leach out whatever there is. Well, you know what, if tannins are okay, here's what happens, is that tannins are nature's natural way for animals to not overeat. Like, if they eat too many leaves with tannins in them, then it kind of coats their intestines, and they really don't ingest anything more, and they don't get fat. So what we do in our culture is remove all tannins, remove all everything, and we eat the calories until we just become so bloated. So tannins are not a good thing, but they also restrict calories. Even if you're ingesting calories, it doesn't get absorbed. So this is nature's abundant way of great wisdom, with great fear, of course. It's like, oh, I don't want my stomach lined with all kinds of tannins. But also you don't want to eat lousy mushrooms that will kill you either. So, I mean, this is what happens. You have to take on life with both hands. So the upper middle picture is a thing I just from the internet, someone taking making mud pies and, you know, what is it, green, some sort of a weird grass tea or something. Yeah, exactly. How fun is that? And then the other aspect that of this earthiness is the cob house. Lower middle is basically a house that's made out of dirt and straw. So if we think we're so often like we have to have cement and we have to have brick and we have to have gypsum and we have to have, no, this is just dirt and straw and probably some cute stuff because it's in England, you know, they do fun stuff.
I helped build one of those when I was at Dancing Rabbit. Most of the homes people live in are cob houses. Pretty simple. You get straw, you get sand, you get straw, sand, clay, and you just kind of make it in big blocks and stack it up. And you always think of like, oh, but who wants to live in some nasty old hut?
Well,
the most beautiful home I have ever seen. And you don't, you know, you don't just get this like box with the standard windows and the standard door. You get to make it whatever shape you want. And you get to have these kind of like little split level homes with beautiful windows, however you want. You can build in art to the walls.
And of course, don't forget that you can make it just like Middle Earth, and you can make it just like a Hobbit house.
Exactly,
with a round door and everything.
Yeah, and it's, as long as you design it for airflow, like it won't mold, you know.
You can make it anywhere. Missouri.
It was in Missouri. It was in like northwestern Missouri, I believe.
But the thing about Cobb is that you have to have a roof.
Right.
Oh, okay. Well, we already have to have a roof anyway. Sure.
How do the code people, like the city codes, like the building codes, have that kind of jive with that? Because I was watching, I'm very interested right now in city codes and how that works with housing. So I was watching late night, I was watching some policy, but I was watching some like YouTube videos of people who were having trouble getting their houses to pass a particular standard code.
Mm-hmm.
And so this one woman had to like pretty much disassemble her house, which was a cob house with beautiful floors. She had to disassemble everything and then do some things and then put everything back, and then some of the stuff got lost and broken.
Yeah.
She had to do. So how do they deal with it? Like, do they have their own codes that are more progressive?
I think part of it is that it's sort of this, it's a huge chunk of land. It's in the middle of nowhere, Missouri. There's different farmlands and other intentional communities nearby. And so when you pull up there, it's like, okay. When it was started, I guess, back in the 80s and 90s, you'd pull in, you know, and there's nothing. And so they just would build one structure and build another structure. And I'm not sure, you know, if you were going to put it on the market and somehow pay a certain tax with it in a certain way, there may be more problems. But for the most part, like, they just build it however they want, and I think because there, you know, there's 60 or 70 people living in this. If you do things the way you want to creatively, a lot of times it doesn't necessarily fit in with like the bureaucratic requirements of things. And so I think they just, for some reason, get a buy on that, or say like, oh, well, we have this many people living here. There aren't necessarily addresses. Once you pull in the driveway, there are no addresses past that. It's just this giant set of loops, and you know, a lot of people, there's one guy there, he builds big beautiful homes, those workshops all the time, and then just sells them for the people who want to move there but who don't have a house to move there. So
I think that most of the time also the code and the violations that could be considered violations that shouldn't necessarily be violations, that system is complaint driven.
Right.
So we're living
right.
In a community of all the people who love these cob houses and want to be in this, they're not going to complain.
Mm-hmm.
So they won't call anyone. But if you have one cob house on your property next to someone else's house and they have an idea that your cob house is not up to standard or not code or whatever, they'll call and complain. In that case,
yeah.
There's a lot of issues.
Yeah, and they have their own. One thing that's cool about having an entire community is that they have their own set of policies, and it's this book of how to deal with conflict resolution,
mm-hmm.
how to deal with forming committees if need be, and making sure everyone's represented. And so there's, you know, they, part of the sustainability involves being able to sustainably solve your problems in a community. to without having to have someone who doesn't know you who lives elsewhere tell you you can or can't do something. You know, in a lot of ways it's very helpful. I don't think you shouldn't have, you know, like flaws, but you know. But and things like things in terms of like whether or not this is a nice house to have in this neighborhood or something.
Well, and there might be more discussion or research in that area. But for right now, it's just playing with ideas in terms of how to be earthy. The other one, if I could say, is the lower right-hand corner, which has to do with sometimes I go to the Google Maps and I just kind of say, oh, I wonder what Japan does. And there's Japan. What they have is that there should not really be a greenhouse there because it's a sloping hill. But they've terraced it, and that they've created a flat zone, and so they can create a greenhouse right there, right next to the road. So terracing is useful. They do it in Japan.
They do it a lot in Southeast Asia. All of them are there terracing. They grow everything on terracing.
Mm-hmm. So we're to the line. Yeah, I have a terrace in my front lawn, by the way. Awesome name. So I also, in terms of reusing, there's a firehouse about three blocks away from here that's now at a place where there's a person who caters food. So there's probably a name that they have, and I've forgotten all that stuff. But this is an open house. It's slow food, bluegrass, or slow food that had an event there. And there are people, the Sherry or whoever it is that is in charge of all that, she made some muffins, show how to make flour, water, oven, and then also if you see in the very upper right hand corner you'll see that there are doors. She found some doors for cheap and then she's going to turn them into tables when she has that open space available for having people. So doors is a reuse.
You can do a lot of cool things with doors.
With doors, yep, I agree. My next slide set has to do with being a bikeaholic. I've recently been having bike troubles, and so in the upper left-hand corner is a picture of if you have a tire that's flat, you need to remove it. One thing you could do is just use any tool that has a, that's tough, that has a little kind of bend to it. So don't use a screwdriver to remove it because you'll pierce the inner tube, but if you find something around it like that coat hook, then you can use that to take out the bike tire from the wheel. The lower left-hand corner is just a table at the Falls City Bike Works that's over in Schnitzelburg, and they just have parts galore and it's kind of fun. That's a display picture. The lower right-hand corner is the actual place itself, which you know, obviously they go to town there and get serious about biking. My problem is in the lower left-hand corner of that picture with the tires. So you can see the upper right-hand picture is packing in ball bearing of the tire of the wheel, the hub, and that's what I did recently. That was a reskill for me. What am I doing? They were there to help me. I did it myself, but they said, oh, do this and do this and do this. And so I have now a tire where before I didn't. So I'm often all about doing reskilling with biking. They have certain tools there that are kind of useful to have. And then I went to looked at bicycling some more. For instance, the lower left-hand picture has that's my work that has all kinds of bikers. That's awesome. Yay. We are doing what Tokyo is doing. So Tokyo, here's a picture again of just the street in Tokyo where there's an apartment complex. And in fact, they have bikes there in Tokyo. You can see there. And also, here, very interesting, in the upper right-hand corner of that picture is a patio of someone's house, and they're drying their clothes. They have a clothes rack there.
You know that's not allowed in a lot of apartments. You're not allowed to keep your clothing outside. And as a matter of fact, in El Dorado, when I used to put my clothing rack on my front porch, the ladies would have a fit. I had to sit in the backyard.
Okay, well, they let you do it in Tokyo, or maybe they just took a picture and it's illegal. Yeah, probably not illegal, but it's what's happening. Anyway, so that's a kind of neat thing. Another thing that happens in Tokyo that's a reskilling, it is the lower right-hand corner. This is a bridge. If you just go across the bridge on Google Maps, that beam of that bridge is so weird. If you go to, like America, they have these things called bolts, and you just put your steel together with bolts. But not in Japan. They put things together through cables. So it's a long cable, and it wraps around. Fascinating, because probably the earthquake, and so something needs to give a little bit. That's fascinating, and so it really is fun. More life hacks, and then we've got plenty of time to go ahead and do this stuff. Is if you get an insect bite,
yes,
go ahead and use a hair dryer on it, because the histamine from the local that makes the itch will go away. So put a hair dryer on your itch area, and it'll become wonderfully itchy, intensely so for about 8 seconds, and then it'll start to get like hot, like burning. You put the hair dryer away at that point, and then you're good for about 8 hours with no scratching because of the histamine disease. So that's worked well for me. And
a woman
doing
radiation treatment asked me if that works on that kind of burn to get the burn from the inside out.
Well, I don't know about itch from radiation is beyond my ken.
I would say it probably wouldn't work because the
it's not a histamine
problem.
Yeah. Other things, it's your middle slide there, is a picture of what not to do with your glasses. This is my son again. And don't put lenses down. I mean, this is, you know, don't put half an inch of oil
when
you have to buy. I got you. Upper right-hand corner is a picture of, I have an axe, and that's my hand. And I've been chopping wood, and I haven't been doing that for months, and my fingers are so soft that I can feel them starting to get blisters, and I stop as soon as that happens, and then I go back 12 hours or 24 hours later, and basically it's going to toughen up my hand without ripping my skin around. Wearing gloves, of course, is good. But another thing that one should always be useful is having really good, strong, tough, resilient hands is to find sidewalk and put your hands right on the sidewalk and grind them, just like sandpaper. So it just gets your fingers really tough, and it's an opportunity everyone has every day, and you heard it here first. Lower right-hand corner.
And I'll believe it. I can imagine more.
In the lower right-hand corner, you can see a picture of a water bottle in the hot sun, and boy, did that get hot. So if you're going to put things, water in the sun, make sure it's glass, because plastic, that is all kinds of weird crap is going to come in there.
Unless it's BPA-free. You can get, I have a plastic water bottle right here from Nalgene. Best water bottle I give out to all of my friends and family for Christmas. It is exactly 1 liter. It is BPA-free, so no matter how hot it gets, no chemicals will leach into the water. Can't recommend it highly enough.
Well, you opened your mouth and you said good stuff. Now, from my perspective, I would just certainly say that there is an aspect called sunlight, which is not temperature related. It has to do with the radiation from the sun, and so there could be some breakdown of oxidation occurring from not just liberation of some chemicals through heat, but from the actual oxidation from the sunlight. So, unless you can retort back that, I would just say consider glass, but it does break, right?
I'll Google it.
Okay.
Either way, the standard plastic bottle.
Yeah, well, hey.
Plastic bottle.
Amen. It's a reskill for everybody, I think. So what happens is that one thing I wanted to talk about earlier was heating your house. And so if you have a wood-burning stove, you have the opportunity to have a neighbor with a big load of truck of wood, upper left-hand corner, with a chainsaw going at it. And if you look to the lower left, you can see what happened, which is our entire backyard is now all full of wood that needs to be chainsawed. A lot of that was delivered by the tool that's in the upper right-hand corner, which is a handmade by a welder. I'm sorry, Zach had to leave. But this is a welded little hand scooter tool with a long and neck to it, and it holds extremely heavy logs, long, heavy logs, really nicely. I was able to scoot it around using that particular tool. That's really cool. But one thing I learned real quick is that when I wanted to start chopping with my axe, I have to first cut it with the chainsaw, but my chainsaw was so dull that, number one, I had to go find the correct kind of chainsaw file, and the second thing is I went ahead and bought a new chainsaw chain just in case I'd be lousy with my filing. But in order to take all that wood and burn it instead of burning fossil fuels, you do need a chainsaw because you'll be sawing by hand forever. Upper left-hand corner is Louisville 1, which I talked about, Zach, last night.
Yeah, I was looking up them today about some help with this.
Yeah, they got a neat little Trojan horse or something. But that's the picture of their new place, the upper middle area. And they get all kinds of projects of all kinds. And so the idea then would be to, oh, I wonder if I could, like, make an aerial. I was telling Zach about making an aerial. So, for instance, the right upper corner has to do with, this is a way to do something that's super light, 35 pounds, goes 55 feet in the air. So if you want to put an antenna up or something like that, you can, there's things that are available. That's cool. But it's a hack, and you need some tools and things like that to do it. Now, the upper left, no, the lower left-hand corner has to do with, there was, I think, some metal was taken to a metal dumper. And this is what happens. It's 10 cents a pound. But look at all that good stuff that's there. There is such neat, cool stuff that's getting thrown away. My heart was so sad just to see the beautiful stuff that got, people just throw it for 10 cents a pound, and it's never going to be used in any circumstances. And there's, if you look at that closely, you can find all kinds of cool stuff in there. And I'll just stop talking because I'll start crying.
I have a thought about that. There's a concept, someone asked not too long ago, we were at a meeting, about how to sort of make like office supplies and stuff like that more sustainable. And there's this concept of embodied energy, which is like basically the amount of energy and resources it takes to make something. So for example, the amount of resources that go into, say, making
filing cabinet.
A glass jar versus a plastic cup. You know, one of them is made by a certain process, takes a certain amount of time, energy, water, petroleum, whatever it takes. Or a pencil versus a pen. One takes a lot more of a thing,
yep.
But maybe it'll last a lot longer. And so, and just seeing a giant pile of plastic is like, you have to realize it's like, this object will be, regardless of whether or not we want it to be, thousands of years old. You may as well find something for it for at least another year or so. So, just a thought, but just like, that's going to be there forever, so you may as well find someone somewhere has some use for it. Like, it's worth it to turn a plastic, you know, tub into something you can use.
Yeah, well,
be there,
and this, but this instance, it's a metal, and so they're going to recycle this energy. This is the metal from there, but still, it's embodied energy is enormous, it's just that. Yeah, the lower... Yeah.
There's no such place as a way. You can't throw it away. There's no
yeah.
such place.
Yeah.
That's cool. The lower right-hand picture is of the putting in micro line of Google fiber. They just a very narrow cut, and they put the fiber down. So you can do cool things with metal. Actually, it's made out of glass. It's fiber optic cable. But that's coming through. So there's neat things to do, and either we're going to do an aerial antenna and do Wi-Fi from, you know, our own backyard, or we'll just rely on Google to get our internet. Who knows? But it's kind of a life hack of what Google versus the traditional cable. And it's a battle out there, and we should win it by having our own aerial in our own backyard. The next slide has to do with the fact that there is a new radio station, WMFP or something. It's 106.5, and it's a Pacifica radio affiliate, so it's Pacific Ocean. Pacifica radio. And the lower right-hand corner is a fundraiser that they did a couple of weeks ago where they actually were streaming live. You can see the microphone there, and there was a band, and there was all kinds of kumbaya and things like that. And so, you know, maybe an instance like this where we could actually have a radio show rather than just have a podcast might be fun to entertain. So to be around those people and listen to the buzz and to listen to that radio station, and the quality of caliber is kind of neat. But there is the aspect of having community radio that talks about really neat things, like substantive things, not only just sustainability, but also, you know, what are we really going to do about the fact that we have a wacko as a president, and, you know, what do the police do with this great authority that's being shoved upon them? Like, do you want a half track and a tank? And, oh, gosh. So let's, you know, we got a new, obviously our Division One, we got a new major, and that's neat, and we love him. But what happened is that was at the Dirt Bowl basketball game last week or a couple of weeks ago, and there was a fight out in the back, and so then the police were there, broke it up. But then about 5 minutes later, there was a drone that went up and just hovered right at that whole scene for like half an hour afterwards, just looking around, see if there's more trouble. And, you know, we just got to get used to that, but it's also good to have the possibility of dialoguing and seeing what's happening in other locations, and so radio allows that. So, you know, radio, whether that being little podcast dialogues like this or broadcasting in a larger perspective, is a life hack. It's not a reskill. Another couple of ideas that just popped up this month is exercise. And there's an opportunity that I have, which is at the bike place. There was right next to it a place where you could do parkour, which is make the world your playground. And so I just took one of the spare inner tubes they had from the bikes, and then I'm going to use it for a stretchy tool because why not? Yep, that's cool. And so that's like, that's cool. There also is the middle bottom is a Portland Community Center. They've got a basketball court there, and you got ping pong, which Zach and I were talking about. And it's a lot of opportunity to exercise. And another exercise is that I do when I bike to work every single day, that past Landon Park has a gazebo, and I'm stopping off and standing up on the picnic tables and grabbing those rungs. They're those solid steel, and they're hard and strong rock. So I'm swinging on those and practicing my gymnastics because you look at the, you've done it?
Oh yeah, and that same gazebo.
Yeah.
It just looks like you should be climbing on it.
Yeah, yeah. So the upper left is kind of all the different kinds of gymnastics and extra and strength things that we should be able to do, cartwheels and handstands and planche and a kip and all these things that one can get involved in, but usually done best in groups and things like that. Another thing I want to say about exercise is that it is dangerous. You got to be careful. So you look at the lower left-hand corner, someone got a big gash because they were inner tubing on a boat and there was a big wave and the heel landed on someone's cheek and there's, you know, stitches involved, and life happens. But you got to do it anyway because it's an adventure. This last picture, which we're almost out of time here, but that's fine, is of a picture of the U of L library stash. When I had various ideas of things that I wanted to read about, but it's way too much, and so it'd be nice to have a little abstract in front, but they don't. They have a preface, and they have a long introduction, and they really, all it does is force you to read more. All I want is, like, give me 7 sentences that tells me what's going to be in this book, and if they don't give that, that's fine. I want them to be a new initiative, which is to have a QR code and that brings you to a website that has those that abstract. So a QR code is the weird barcode thing that you put in your cell phone and it'll take you to the website. Because I mean, I love books and the feel of them, but I can't know quick enough what it all is in there. So that would be a life hack, I think. But still, anybody can go to you with a library and pick out as many books as you want, up to 12. And the next thing I want to discuss about is basically that I was listening on the radio that they said that people are getting lots of PTSD, and one way to get around that is flute. You know, this lady is really into flute, and I like to play piano, so it's important to think about the possibility that catharsis is important, and you know, whether you play guitar, I don't have my guitar here, or...
People getting PTSD from what?
Life. Everything about life is just, they're getting way too old. So, just the beauty is, you know, I was just recently over at the big four bridge, and there's a drum circle there. And you can do drum circles anytime, anywhere. So it just takes organization. And one song I'm looking forward to learning about is Beans and Cornbread at a Fight. I heard it on Pacifica Radio, and now I'm going to probably read it sometime. Just to encourage everybody to read the Portland Anchor. That's the next slide. And if you want to have mail to your house for $10 a year, go ahead. And if you're listening to the podcast and you're in Arizona of all places, you can get $10 a year. This is the article that I just published, and I'm trying to tell everybody to read it. And I think I have some other things, which is very fascinating. We don't have time for that. That's a fantastic idea. That's a fantastic idea. Black walnut henna tattoos. It's just time to come. Hey, Houston, standing over there, Houston, which is, you know, are we really resilient as we think we are, Houston? And next month, we're going to do it again, 6 to 7:30, and metajenny.com/reskill is the place you can hear this podcast and slides, et cetera. So I think with that, I'll have to say, what a fantastic job, Nate Peterson. Why don't you do it again? Well, okay, unless somebody else wants to take the lead next month, that we're probably just going to go ahead and make good things happen here. So does anybody have any final thoughts that they want before they kick us out? We've got about 3 minutes. You can speak for 3 minutes. Does anybody want to say anything? Oh, Simon was going to say something.
A lot of the things that I mentioned earlier were sort of the abstract, the fluff, the, you know, the more kind of broad things to think about, and then the pictures were specific examples, and I really encourage everybody to go and look specifically for awesome examples of things that are happening with regards to, like, changing the food system, getting really creative with how to manage land and repurposing. All right.
I love it when you hear it here first, which you just did. Okay. All right. Signing off. Bye-bye.